Well, good evening. See, we've got the faithful remnant here this evening. In all seriousness, I appreciate you being here. I know that nobody held a gun to your head and made you come. You could have stayed home had you so desired, but you wouldn't have it any other way. And I appreciate the fact that you are here. I want to ask you a question. How many times in the Old Testament does the word Christian appear? Anybody want to take a guess? Zero. Doesn't appear in the Old Testament. We wouldn't expect it to, would we? Because there weren't any Christians before the time of Christ. I mean, after all, where does the name Christian come from? It comes from Christ. So that brings up the second question. How many times in the New Testament does the name Christian appear? 100? No. 50? 25? 10? 3? Once in the book of 1 Peter, twice in the book of Acts. Now that doesn't mean, by the way, that we shouldn't use that word. It's a good word. I have heard people say, well, it only occurs 3 times and it was a name that was made up by the enemies of Jesus as a mockery, and it's an insult to even use that name. Wrong. We're going to look tonight at the 3 occasions where the word Christian does appear in the New Testament and see what this is all about. So let's begin, if you will, by turning with me to Acts chapter 11 and verse number 26. In Acts 11, verse 26, we are in the city of Antioch in Syria. There are 2 Antiochs in the book of Acts. One is in Syria, the other in Pisidia, and this is one in Syria. So Syrian Antioch. Paul and Barnabas have been working with the church there, and they do that for a full year before they leave on what we call the first missionary journey. And so in chapter 11 and verse number 26, when he, Barnabas, had found him, Saul, he brought him back to Antioch, and so that was for a whole year they assembled with the church and taught a great many people, and the disciples were first called Christians in Antioch. So there's the first time that we see the name Christian being used. Now again, there's a popular misconception that this was a name that was made up by the Jews or the pagans or other people who didn't like the disciples of Jesus as a reproach against them, somewhat similar to the way that many in the religious world around us would look at us and say, that's a bunch of Campbellites. That's a misnomer. That's intended to be an insult. But that's not how the word Christian originated. There is a particular word that Luke uses for the when he says called. They were called Christians. The English word called occurs many, many, many times in the New Testament. But only 10 times is this word used, and in every single case, it is God who does the calling. This is a name that was given by the Lord himself. The other word is literally used hundreds of times and in various contexts, but this one always, always, always means God is the one doing the calling. It's the same word that we read, for example, in Matthew, where the wise men in chapter 2, verse 12, were warned of God. They were called of God in a dream, saying, you need to leave. You know, you need to get out of here because, you know, Herod is going to be really upset with you for not telling him, not coming back and telling him where you found Jesus. In Hebrews chapter 11, verse 7, Noah was warned of God to build the ark and so forth. It's the same word here that's used for called. So here it is a name that was given by God himself. And in fact, it is a fact that in the Old Testament prophet Isaiah, it was prophesied that God's people would have a new name given to them. And that is the name Christian. It is the name that is used here in Acts chapter 11. And so, let's move from there over to the other location in the book of Acts where this name is used. And we'll just turn a few pages over to chapter 26. Again, the chapter is number 26, and we're actually going to look at verse number 28. Acts chapter 26, verse 28. Here, the Apostle Paul is giving his defense before King Herod Agrippa. And as he does that, in the 28th verse, Agrippa says to him, "Paul, you almost persuade me to become a," and there it is, "to become a Christian." Now again, Herod wasn't being, I don't believe Herod was being catty here and using the name as an insult. He knew that Paul was a Christian. He knew that those who were following Jesus, obeying the gospel, being faithful to him, worshiping him, doing his will, those were Christians. He knew more than he's given credit for about the faith, the way, as we talked about for the last couple of Sunday nights. And so Paul, of course, had been taken into custody in Jerusalem due to some false accusations by the Jews, and later on their attempts to murder him. The governor Felix had left Paul imprisoned in order to win favor from the Jews. And so now Felix's successor, Porcius Festus, had also left Paul in prison for the same reason. And so now Paul has appealed to Caesar. Remember that Paul uses his right as a Roman citizen to appeal his case to Caesar. He will not go back because he knows that the Jews are laying in wait for him in Jerusalem. So now, poor old governor, he's caught between the proverbial rock and the hard place. He's got to send Paul to Rome because that's Paul's right as a Roman citizen. He has no choice in the matter. What charges is he going to tell Caesar? He can't just say, "Well, I'm sending Paul with no charges." I mean, Caesar would have his hide if he did that. So what is he going to do? Well, he's going to get old Agrippa, Herod Agrippa, to listen to Paul and help him come up with some kind of a charge that he can lay against the apostle as he sends him on to Rome. So in the process, we have this statement, "Almost you persuade me to become a Christian." I really don't know if the king was serious about that, if he really was almost persuaded, or if he was being kind of ironic here and saying, "Well, do you really think you can persuade me to become a Christian like you?" I don't know what he was meaning, and I don't really care. But he uses that expression, a Christian. He knew what a Christian was. And so Paul's reply to him, of course, was, "I would to God," meaning I wish it would be my pleasure, my goodwill, "that not only you, but all who hear me today might become both almost and altogether such as I am, except for these chains." So yes, I would like, King Agrippa, not only for you to become a Christian, but for everyone around here. And there's a big crowd of dignitaries. You know how politicians like to have big crowds of dignitaries, right? And so here is a notable prisoner. Paul was rather well known, and here is a king who has come for an official visit to the governor, and now they're going to have this big get together, and all these people are going to listen to the apostle give his defense. And Paul says, "Yes, king, I would love for you to be a Christian." I'd love for every one of these people to become a Christian. I would like for them to be just as I am, except for these chains. I wouldn't wish these chains on anybody. I wouldn't put them on a dog I didn't like, right? But other than that, I wish everybody would just become a Christian. You see, Paul knew that it wouldn't do to become almost a Christian. We have a song that we sing, don't we? Almost persuaded, almost persuaded. Almost isn't going to get the job done, is it? Almost, but lost, the last line of the song says, and that is exactly right, because the name Christian demands true-hearted, wholehearted dedication and service to God. Being a Christian could cost you your life. It already had some people. Eventually, it will cost Paul his life. Not right now. Paul is going to go on to Rome, and he's going to be exonerated the first time. But by the time we get to 2 Timothy, Paul is in a dungeon awaiting execution. And he says, the time of my departure has come. I'm already being poured out as an offering. The time of my departure has come. So eventually, Paul will indeed give his life. But he knows that being a Christian is not a matter of almost. You either are or you're not. None of this on and off, none of this namby-pamby, yeah, I'm a Christian, but nope. You're either with me, Jesus said, or what? You're against me. No walking, there is no fence to walk. Lots of people want to remain neutral. They want to walk the fence. Folks, there's not a fence. You know that. And so, being a Christian, the name Christian today is tossed about and tacked onto anything that looks like it might be semi-religious. And that's a shame, really. The name Christian is better than that. The name Christian ought to be honored more than that. And I'm sorry to say that ignorant people, and I don't use that term ignorant as an insult, but simply meaning lacking in knowledge, people who are lacking in knowledge, tack the name Christian onto all sorts of things that don't have the first thing to do with the Bible or Christianity. A Christian holiday, let's see, what Christian holiday would that be? Christmas? Easter? Nope, sorry, that doesn't have a thing to do with Christianity. Not one thing. If there is a holy day, I guess it would be the first day of the week. That's the day that's set apart. And so we could call that a holy day in one sense of the term. But as far as just tacking the name Christian onto anything and everything, that's entirely inappropriate. I'm sorry to say, members of the body of Christ sometimes attach the word Christian onto anybody that happens to be pretty much religious and maybe they even profess some kind of belief in Jesus. We need to be careful. We're not trying to insult anybody. We're not trying to be judgmental. But just because someone says, hey, I go to church and I believe in Jesus, doesn't make them a Christian. And so we need to ask the question, how does one become a Christian? Has Joe Blow over here become a Christian? Or is he just a what we might call a professing Christian, someone who says, I'm a Christian, even though he or she may never have obeyed the gospel of Christ? Well, let's go to the final place in the New Testament, and this, again, is in Peter's first letter, and we're in chapter 4, and we'll be looking at verses 15 and 16 from 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 15 and 16. I'll give you just a moment to turn there, and then we will do some reading. In fact, I think we're going to back up to verse 14 to get a running start here. If you are reproached for the name of Christ, blessed are you, for the Spirit of glory and of God rests upon you. On their part, he is blasphemed. On your part, he is glorified. But let none of you suffer as a murderer or a thief or an evildoer, as a busybody in other people's matters. If you're going to suffer, don't deserve it. You know, people who murder and steal and get in trouble for being a busybody in other people's matters, if they suffer for it, they're getting what's coming to them. But, verse 16, if anyone suffers as a Christian, there's the word, suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God in this matter, or some translations say in this name. All right, so if you suffer as a Christian, that's different than suffering because you're some kind of a criminal. You've done something wrong and you deserve to suffer for it. Here, you suffer as a Christian. What did Jesus say about suffering for righteousness' sake? Blessed are those who have suffered for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when men shall persecute you and speak all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. So here, Peter is, I'm confident, thinking back to what Jesus said and saying, if you suffer as a Christian, don't be ashamed of it. There's nothing to be ashamed of in wearing the name Christian. But rather, you glorify God, just like Jesus glorified God by suffering for righteousness' sake. And he is the premier example of that, is he not? He is the one who suffered for my sins and for yours. Now, his enemies were determined that they were doing the right thing and that God was getting even with that evil man named Jesus because of horrible things that he was teaching and doing. They were dead wrong. We beheld him smitten by God and afflicted. But here's the truth of the matter. He was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement for our peace was upon him, and by his stripes we are healed. All we, like sheep, have gone astray. We've gone everyone to his own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. Jesus suffered for righteousness' sake. And so Peter is telling us, if you suffer as a follower of Jesus, as one who wears the name of Jesus, as a Christian, you don't need to be ashamed. You glorify God by suffering, not because you deserve it, but because you're a Christian. Others reproach you for being a Christian, you count it an honor. What did the disciples do, the early Christians, the apostles even? When they were beaten, they were abused because they would not be quiet about Jesus. The Sanhedrin beat them, and they went home and whined and cried and never said another word about Jesus. No, you know that's wrong. They thanked God that they were privileged to suffer for the name of Jesus. So the name Jesus, or the name Christian rather, identifies us with the Christ. We are owned by him. Does that sound bad? It shouldn't. We are bought with a price, bought with the blood of Christ. Acts chapter 20, verse 28. The church which he purchased, with what? Money? No. With his own blood, he bought us. We are bought with a price, 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 19 through 20. Therefore, because we belong to him, we are to glorify him in our body and in our spirit, both of which belong to him. So we are to grow in the likeness of Christ. That name Christian identifies us with him, so we ought to act like him, and we ought to grow in becoming more and more like him. Romans chapter 8, verse 29, we are conformed to the image of God's Son. How do you become conformed to the image of Christ? Well, you don't go back and try to figure out what he looked like physically. That's a hopeless case. But you become more like he acted, more like his attitude was. You change your way of thinking to conform with his way of thinking. You change your way of behaving to conform with his way of behaving. Philippians 3:10, Paul talked about being conformed to his death. That is to say, so devoted to him that Paul, and in this case, you and I, should be willing to give our very lives in service, just as Jesus gave his life. So God gave the name Christian. Men have invented all kinds of names to identify various religious groups and people, and we see, you can look all over the internet and you can see all sorts of various and sundry names. Sometimes people even hyphenate the word Christian. Well, I'm a Baptist Christian, or I'm a Methodist Christian, or I'm a Lutheran Christian. Wait a minute. Where did you find that? is that in here? I don't think I've seen that. I've read the book a few times. I don't think I've seen that anywhere. Don't hyphenate yourself away from the Lord. I've even heard people, and this grates my teeth, well, I'm a Church of Christer, or I'm a Church of Christ Christian. Enough. I'm a Christian, okay? I don't mind mentioning I'm a member of the Church of Christ. I'm perfectly content with that. But to hyphenate that and say I'm a Church of Christ Christian, that just kind of rubs my fur the wrong way. And I'm not going to turn that cat around because we just don't need to do that. So let's abandon the man-made names. And you know that we're going to abandon the man-made creeds and all the confessions and catechisms and what have you. Why can't we just be Christians? What would be wrong with that? And I know I'm like I usually am on Sunday night, preaching to the choir. I get that. I think we're all in agreement on this. But God gave the church a particular name, gave to the disciples of Jesus a particular name, and that name is Christian. And I want us to wear that name happily. I would say proudly, but so many associate the word pride with arrogance, and I don't want us to be arrogant, but I do want us to be happy about the privilege of wearing the name Christian. If there would be those by happenstance in our assembly this evening who need to become simply a Christian, you can do that tonight. If you've already done that, and I think all of us have that are accountable in this room, and you've not been living the life that you ought to be, you haven't been glorifying God in the name Christian, let's make a new start this evening, and we'll stand and sing to encourage your response.